Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
We shouldn't have come here. Prequel. I never liked the woods. I know that makes me sound soft. Most people would kill for a weekend away from the city, off-grid, unplugged, nature therapy, all that crap. But I've always thought there was something wrong with deep forests. The way they close in on you. The way sound dies beneath the canopy, like something's listening that doesn't want to be heard. So when Natalie said she found a cabin for rent, miles from the nearest paved road, I should have said no. But she looked so damn tired. She hadn't been sleeping. Said she kept dreaming about her sister again, about the accident. And she smiled when she showed me the listing. That brittle, hollow kind of smile that said, "If I don't get out of here, I might break." So I said yes. The hike up was worse than I expected. The road was more of a logging trail carved into the mountainside like an afterthought. Trees crowded us on both sides, tall and narrow, their bark twisted like rope under tension. The air smelled wrong, not bad, just off, like sap and something rotting beneath it. I kept catching glimpses of movement between the trunks, too fast to be animals, too big to be birds. Every time I stopped, Natalie would glance back at me, brow furrowed.
"You okay?"
I lied. "Yeah, just winded." She didn't believe me, but she didn't press. By the time we reached the cabin, the sun was already low. It was older than the photos made it look. Gray wood warped by rain, one window cracked, the door leaning slightly on its hinges. No phone service, no neighbors. Just us, the trees, and the creeping sense that we were already being watched.
"I love it," Natalie said, setting her bag down on the porch.
I didn't. Inside, the air was stale. Dust floated in thick shafts of dying sunlight. The floorboards groaned under every step like they were warning us. There were antlers nailed to the wall, 7-point rack stacked in the middle. A dark stain on the floor near the hearth. I didn't ask. I didn't want to know. That night, we opened a bottle of cheap wine and lit a fire. Natalie seemed lighter, smiled more, even laughed a little. But something kept scratching at the back of my mind. A feeling I couldn't shake. Like we were trespassing. Around 11, we heard something move outside. A heavy step, then another, slow, deliberate, testing the edge of the porch. We froze. Natalie mouthed, "Bear?" I shook my head. I don't know how I knew, I just did. It wasn't a bear. It didn't make sense. Whatever it was didn't move like an animal. It didn't breathe like one. The sound it made wasn't walking. It was circling. Then came the knock. Not a bang. Not a scratch. Just three slow, deliberate taps on the cabin door. We didn't answer. We didn't sleep. The knock didn't come again. For what felt like an hour, we sat in silence. The fire in the hearth cracked low, shadows rippling across the cabin walls. I could hear Natalie breathing, slow and shallow, like she was trying not to make noise.
"I think it's gone,"
she whispered eventually. I didn't believe that, but I needed her to. We needed one of us to keep it together. "I'm gonna check," I said. She grabbed my wrist.
"Don't."
But I was already moving, slowly, carefully. Every board creaked under my weight like it was betraying me. I stepped up to the door and leaned towards the cracked window beside it, angling just enough to peek through the gap in the glass. Nothing. No figure, no tracks. Just fog curling through the trees and the faint silver light of the moon bleeding across the clearing. But the feeling was still there. That low, magnetic dread pulling at the base of my spine. The sense that something was still out there, not watching exactly, but waiting. I stepped back, locking the deadbolt. Put one of the kitchen chairs under the handle just in case. Natalie was sitting cross-legged on the couch now, her knees pulled to her chest, trying to look relaxed and failing. Her eyes were on fire, but her mind was miles away. "What book did you bring?" I asked. I needed her to talk, to remind myself that we were still here, still us. She blinked.
For the Ninth by Caden Gardner.
I raised an eyebrow. "That one's interesting. I thought you hated dark fantasy stories."
"I do,"
she said, hugging her legs tighter. "But I kept seeing it in the sidebar of that horror subreddit, the one with that, what's his name, Campfire Tales guy narrating it. You said you liked his voice." "I do," I said, smiling despite myself. "He makes it feel so real." She looked at me then, really looked.
"Does it feel like we're in one of those stories?"
I didn't answer. Because yes, it did. She stood, moving to the window.
"Maybe we're overreacting. Maybe it was just an animal or some lost hiker screwing around."
"Then why didn't they say anything?" I asked. She didn't have a response. Neither of us did. That's when the smell hit us. It came in slow, faint at first, like wet leaves and something spoiled. Then stronger, ranker. Like iron and sewage. Like something dead that had never been alive to begin with. Natalie covered her nose.
"Jesus, what is that?"
I didn't answer. I was staring at the window now. Because it had fogged. Just the window beside the door. Every other pane in the cabin was clear. But this one, the one closest to us, was fogged from the outside. Then a shape
pressed against it. Just for a second. Long, thin, like the edge of a hand where the fingers went too far down. That was all I needed. "We have to go," I said. "Now." The cabin groaned again. Not from the wind. Not from settling. From pressure. Like something heavy was shifting across the porch. Like it knew we were still inside. "We can't go through the door," I whispered. "It's too close."
"Then what?"
Natalie started, but I was already moving. I yanked the throw rug away from the center of the room, revealing the hatch we had noticed earlier but never bothered to open. Just four boards.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Words nailed into the floor with a rusted metal ring in the center. I jammed my fingers under it and pulled. It didn't budge at first. The wood screamed against itself. Each second it stayed stuck felt like it dragged the attention of whatever was outside closer. Natalie dropped beside me, breath hot on my neck.
"Hurry, please!"
One more pull and the hatch snapped open. The smell hit us hard. Damp, rotted earth, and the old insulation. Something sharp and sour beneath it, like mildew left to breed in the dark. I grabbed the flashlight from the side table and shined it down. Crawl space. Maybe 3 feet high, packed dirt floor. Exposed beams overhead, a tangle of cobwebs, and my throat tightened. There were drag marks in the dirt. Deep ones. Something had been pulled through here more than once.
"Willow,"
Natalie said, her voice cracking. I knew she saw them too. I didn't give her time to panic. I dropped down first, ignoring the way the beams scraped my back, then reached up and helped her lower herself in. We closed the hatch above us, not all the way, just enough to keep the light from spilling out. It was silent. Not quiet, silent. The kind of silence that hurts. No insects, no creaking wood, no breathing but our own. I pressed a finger to my lips, then pointed towards the far end of the crawl space where a sliver of open foundation looked just wide enough to squeeze through. We started moving. Crawling in the dark, shoulder to shoulder, every breath feeling too loud. I could feel the earth pressing in, cold and wet against my skin. I swore I heard something behind us. No, beneath us. Like the dirt was shifting. Natalie gripped my ankle once, hard. I turned to her, her eyes wide with terror. She mouthed something. "It's here." I shook my head. No, couldn't be. But then I heard it too. Something was breathing. Under us. Not through lungs, not like a person. It was deeper, thicker, like air being dragged through meat. We didn't speak. We just crawled. The opening at the far end felt like salvation. I shoved through first, out into the night air, gasping like I'd been drowning. Natalie followed, covered in dirt, eyes darting to the tree line. The woods never looked so alive. The trees didn't sway. They twitched, like something brushing through them too fast to see. Behind us, the cabin was dark. But something moved in the window. Not a person. Not even a shape. Just a presence. The glass didn't reflect anything back. It was swallowing the light.
"Which way?"
Natalie whispered, her voice trembling. I didn't answer right away. I was staring at the ground. There were footprints in the mud. Ours. But there were others too. Larger. Heavier. And they were following. "The tower," I said, breath fogging in the cold night air. "We head for the tower." Natalie looked back towards the cabin one last time. Whatever was there hadn't stepped out onto the porch again, but the dread still clung to our skin like smoke. The woods whispered with every gust, and I could feel that presence watching, not chasing, herding. The tower had to be a half a mile east, maybe more. We had seen it from a ridge on the hike in, just a crooked silhouette against the skyline. No trail led to it, just a slope of thick underbrush and half-fallen trees. But it was tall, exposed, might have a radio, might even have a working antenna. We moved fast and slow, branches clawing at our arms, our faces. The moonlight barely filtered through the canopy, and every time I blinked, I thought I saw something leaning behind a tree. Something that didn't shift with the wind. We didn't speak. The forest around us did, but in fragments. Dry leaves rustled where there was no breeze. A long, low creak from a tree that felt like it was holding its breath. And always, somewhere behind us, that wet, meaty sound of something breathing just out of sight. I wanted to scream, but I didn't. By the time we saw the tower, I could barely feel my fingers. It was worse up here. Wind slicing through the trees. The structure looked ancient, steel legs rusted, observation deck tilted to one side. The stairs groaned as we climbed, and halfway up, a step snapped beneath my weight. I froze. Natalie caught my wrist.
"Keep going," she hissed.
I did. At the top, the door hung open on one hinge. Inside, the shack was stripped bare. No supplies, no furniture. Just a desk bolted to the floor, and a weather-stained radio unit mounted on the wall. It looked dead. Natalie went straight to it and turned every knob. Nothing. She hit the power switch again, more forcefully this time. A light blinked red, then green. A low click, static, then a line opened. A voice came through. Male, calm, measured.
"Identify."
Natalie and I stared at each other. She leaned in.
We're not supposed to be here. We were staying at a cabin near Pine Hollow Trail and something followed us. We need help, please.
The radio was quiet for a beat too long. Then the voice returned.
"You're not one of mine."
Something about the way he said it chilled me worse than the wind. Not confused, not surprised, just assessing. "We're just hikers," I said. "My name is Willow. My friend's name is Natalie. There's something out here and it's not human." Another pause. Then the man spoke again, lower this time.
I need you to listen to me very carefully. Lock the door. Don't go back down. Don't move unless it does first.
He paused. The static cracked.
I'm pinging the last known coordinates of Outpost 9. If you're near it, that means the perimeter's already failed.
What? What perimeter?
Natalie asked. The man didn't answer. Instead, he said something that made my stomach knot.
Hang on, we're sending a retrieval team.
And then the signal cut. Just like that. Gone. Natalie looked at me, pale and shaking.
Willow, who was that?
I don't know, I whispered. But I recognized something in his voice. Authority, cold, clinical. Like this wasn't new to him. Like this had happened before. I moved over to the window and stared down through the trees. The forest looked the same, but I could feel it shifting. Somewhere below, something clicked, loud and sharp, like bones snapping. Then the smell returned. Iron, smoke, static. We weren't alone. And
this fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Whoever that man was, he knew exactly what was out there. We locked the door like he said. Not that it would matter. The thing that followed us, if it even needed doors, had already moved in ways that didn't make sense. But it felt like something. Like the rules had still applied here, even if they bent. I dragged the rusted desk in front of the door for good measure. The scrape of metal on warped wood echoed too loud in the cramped space. I winced at the noise. Natalie paced behind me, biting the edges of her thumbnail. Her hand wouldn't stop shaking. Neither would mine. But the voice on the radio, he sounded certain. We're sending a retrieval team. That meant someone was coming. That meant we just had to wait. The wind picked up outside, making the tower groan, joints flexing with age. The whole structure swayed ever so slightly. We sat on the floor back to back, flashlight clutched between us, casting a cone of light towards the only window that faced the stairs. I checked my phone again. No signal.
I don't know what I expected.
For a while, nothing happened. And that silence started to feel safe. It was a fragile kind of comfort, like catching your breath in the eye of a storm. But it was all we had. We talked in whispers. Natalie asked about my brother. I asked if she was still dating that girl from her office. We didn't mention the thing in the woods. Not directly. We circled around it, like speaking about it too clearly might invite it. At some point, she dozed off beside me, her head resting against my shoulder. And for a moment, I thought maybe we'd make it. Then I heard it. Click. Soft, sharp, bone against metal. Click, click, click. Coming from the stairs. I held my breath and slowly reached for the flashlight, turned it off. The dark returned like a blanket soaked in ice water. I could feel Natalie shift awake beside me, feel her breath catch when she realized something had changed. Click.
Click. Closer. A step creaked. The window was too dirty to see through clearly. Just the faint outline of the stairs, the fog, the faint movement in the black. Another step. Another. Then, silence. I could feel it waiting just beyond the door. That unnatural stillness, like a predator at the edge of a tree line, like something trying to decide if we were worth the effort. We stayed frozen. 5 minutes. 10. Maybe more. Then the doorknob turned. Just once. Slowly. Deliberately. It didn't rattle. Didn't shake. Just twisted exactly halfway. Then stopped. I could hear Natalie start to cry quietly beside me, her hand gripping mine so tight it hurt. Her knuckles brushed the wound she had got climbing the tower. The skin on her shin had peeled back into a long gash where a step had splintered. It was still bleeding, soaking into her sock. I tried to bandage it with what little we had. Now I was worried it had enough to leave a scent. Another sound. Not a click, not a step. A scrape. Like something with too many limbs brushing against the outer wall of the shack. I didn't move. I didn't breathe. And then, like that, it was gone. Just like that. The pressure lifted. The silence softened. No more footsteps. No knock. No dragging sound down the stairs. Just nothing. I waited another 10 minutes before daring to move. Then I looked at Natalie. Her face was pale, lips trembling. She exhaled, slow and shaking.
I think it's gone.
I nodded, though I didn't believe it. And still, I felt it, just beneath my skin, like the forest itself was holding its breath, like something left a part of itself here, watching through the boards. I pressed a hand on the radio. Static. No voice, no retrieval team, just the distant howl of wind across the Oregon ridgeline. And something in that wind whispered, "You're not safe yet." We found a flare by accident. Tucked inside a warped metal panel bolted to the underside of the desk, hidden behind a false faceplate. It clicked loose when I leaned on it. Inside, one battered orange flare gun and a single sealed cartridge wrapped in wax paper. There was no note, no instructions, just the unspoken implication. Use this only when there's nothing else left. Natalie was the one who loaded it. Her hands shook, fingers sticky with blood from the gash on her shin, but she still got it seated. I found a narrow gap between two old boards on the east-facing window. The glass was long gone, just splinters and foggy air beyond. I hesitated. "This is a terrible idea," I muttered.
"Yeah,"
Natalie said.
"Do it anyways."
I raised the flare gun, angled it up, and pulled the trigger. The flare hissed into the sky, trailing brilliant red light that flickered across the trees like a scream made visible. We ducked back into the shadows, waiting. 10 minutes passed. Then, movement. At first, just a glint of light between the trees. Then, flashlights. 4 of them, cutting low and fast across the undergrowth. I could hear voices now, sharp, commanding, male and female. One barked something like, "Formation 6!
while another responded with the quick, "North Quadrant clear!" They were armed, I could see that much. Black tactical gear, vests, long-barreled rifles with strange attachments. No visible insignia except a circle patch on one shoulder, faded and unreadable. They didn't look like Rangers. They didn't look like police, but they moved like soldiers. Natalie sat against the wall.
Oh my God, they saw the flare.
Relief crashed into me all at once. I nearly laughed. Maybe that voice on the radio wasn't just a hallucination. Maybe. Then the first shot rang out. Crack. Gunfire erupted below us in a sudden, frantic burst. Muzzle flashes lit up the trees. Someone shouted, "It's right there!" and then was cut off by a sound I couldn't place. Not a scream. A wet pop, like pressure tearing flesh in two. Natalie clasped a hand over her mouth. I dragged her back from the window. Down below, chaos unfolded. Heavy footsteps scrambled across the clearing. Another voice, deeper, angrier, yelled something I couldn't make out. Then more gunfire. Something crashed against the metal. The whole tower shook. We heard it then. The thing, moving through the underbrush like a centipede dragging a corpse. I didn't see it. Just its shadow flickering between flashes of gunlight. But I heard it breathing, louder now, wrong. Like it had grown lungs just for this moment, like it was trying to be human and failing. The gunfire didn't stop, but it started getting farther away. As if the team was retreating.
"Willow?"
Natalie whispered, gripping my hand so hard her nails cut skin.
"They're not winning."
I didn't answer, because I already knew. Something slammed into the base of the tower. The entire structure groaned, shuddering like it might come loose from the bedrock. The voices below were gone, but the smell was back. That scorched metal stench. That static. The same scent that had clung to the window. The tower screamed. No, not the structure. The thing outside. A screech ripped through the forest, high, piercing, and wet. Like metal twisting in a fire. Like a person screaming through lungs that hadn't evolved to use. The kind of sound that made your spine twitch and your vision blur around the edges. Then it hit the tower again. The whole structure bucked sideways. A bolt snapped. Floorboards cracked under our feet. Natalie cried out and clung to the window frame to keep from sliding into the far wall. I grabbed her with one hand, the other reaching for the flare gun. Useless now, but it felt better to hold something. Outside, something massive moved below us. I still couldn't see it, only the absence it created, like it bent light around its limbs, like reality itself blurred around its skin. Then, light. From deep in the woods, headlights. First one pair, then two, then more. White beams punched through the fog, brighter than the moon, washing the clearing in a sterile light. Engines growled. The unmistakable rumble of heavy tires over soft earth. APCs. Three of them, matte black and mostly unmarked, plowed through the tree line like battering rams. Their sides bore no agency logos, just faded paint and rows of bolts. One had scorch marks across the hood. Another had what looked like claw gouges running down its driver's side. Men spilled out, fast, quiet, trained. More than a dozen this time. helmets, heavy gear, faces covered in armored masks. They fanned out, forming a perimeter without hesitation. And then I saw the weapons. Not rifles, not shotguns. These looked like devices. Long-barreled cannons with glowing blue coils at the tips. Some of the soldiers carried cubes slung across their backs, wired into their suits.
"Do you see this?"
Natalie whispered, voice cracking.
"Do you see them?"
I didn't answer. One of the men pointed towards the tower and shouted,
"Target located! North face! Begin containment protocol!"
They weren't looking at us. They were looking at it. Two soldiers dropped to their knees, driving stakes into the earth, metal rods with thin wires strung between them. The wires hummed faintly at first, then louder, a rising vibration that made the fillings in my teeth itch. The creature responded. It screeched again, angrier this time, desperate. The fog peeled back around its shape. I still couldn't see details, only suggestions. Long, wrong, moving like it hadn't fully decided on a shape. The humming wires flared with blue light. Then they snapped taut, as if pulled by an invisible force, and something lashed out from the darkness. Not a limb, not a claw. A ripple. A tear in the air. It struck the perimeter, and the ground exploded in dirt and static. The soldiers held their line. One of them raised his device, whatever it was, and fired. A pulse of white-blue light erupted from the barrel, spiraling like a corkscrew. It hit the thing, and for the first time, it screamed in pain. Not rage, not mimicry. Pain. It staggered, fell sideways. The perimeter wires lit up, bright as lightning, anchoring its form with thin, dancing filaments of energy. The air stank like ozone and burnt meat. I pressed my face to the window, breath fogging the glass. The creature thrashed once more, then stilled, slumped, contained. Smoke rose from the perimeter. None of the soldiers celebrated. They just moved in tighter, weapons still trained on the creature's shape. A few carried long black cases with seals and locks. One opened a panel on his wrist and spoke into it. I couldn't hear the words.
"Directive Alpha, Carter, I can confirm containment."
Carter. I looked at Natalie. Who the hell are these people? She shook her head slowly, staring down with wide, bloodshot eyes.
"I don't know," she whispered, "but they knew it was here."
I didn't want to call out. Every instinct screamed to stay quiet, stay low, stay invisible. Whatever they were, soldiers, mercs, or something worse, they hadn't noticed us yet. Their attention was still on that thing they had just pinned to the forest floor with glowing wires and unnatural weapons. But then I looked at Natalie's leg. The gash was worse than I thought. It had soaked through the makeshift bandage, blood now dark and sticky down her calf. She was shaking harder now, skin pale beneath the sweat on her forehead. Infection, shock, or worse. We couldn't wait for sunrise. Couldn't limp back through those woods. So I stepped to the window, and I shouted,
"Hey, up here!"
My voice cracked, catching in the raw air. One of the men looked up, then another, rifles turned, not in panic, not in fear, but precision.
"Please!"
I raised both hands.
"We're not involved. We're just hikers. My friend's hurt. She needs medical attention."
For a moment, no one said anything. Just silence below, crackling tension in the air. Then one of them, the one with the weapon forearm displayed, touched something on his wrist and spoke again. His voice was low, indistinct. He turned away. A third man shifted his rifle slightly. I froze. Then a woman's voice echoed up through a speaker mounted on the side of one of the APCs.
Remain where you are. Do not come down the stairs. We are aware of your presence.
She's bleeding,
I shouted, pointing behind me.
She can't walk.
Another pause. Then,
medical personnel are en route. Do not move. Do not interfere with the operation.
The voice was sharp, professional, used to being obeyed. It sounded rehearsed. Not cold exactly, but practiced. Like this wasn't the first time they had found civilians after a breach. I stepped back, heart pounding.
They heard us, I told Natalie. They're sending someone.
She nodded, barely. Her breath came in shallow waves.
I don't like this, she whispered. They're too calm. They knew we were up here. Why didn't they help sooner?
I don't know, I said, crouching beside her. But they're better than what's out there.
Outside, the creature remained still inside the glowing perimeter. Its body twitched occasionally, like it wasn't fully dead, just coiled, dormant, waiting. The soldiers hadn't holstered their weapons, and none of them turned their backs on it. 10 minutes passed. Then headlights swept through the trees again, smaller vehicle this time. A van, armored but marked with faded Red Cross insignias on its doors. Two figures climbed out, both in black, wearing gloves and masks. One carried a satchel. The other pulled a collapsible stretcher from the back. They moved like soldiers too. One of them looked up at the tower, pointed. Then the voice came through again, this time closer, piped through one of their handheld radios.
You are clear to descend, slowly, no sudden movements. We will meet you halfway.
I helped Natalie up, careful with her weight. Every creak of the tower stairs felt like a scream, but we moved, step by step, down into the light. The forest stank like scorched air and ozone. The closer we got, the more I could feel the thing in the wire perimeter. Its eyes weren't open, but it knew. It felt us. Something inside me, something primal, knew it wasn't dead. Two soldiers met us at the platform halfway down. One held up a scanner, small, sleek, blinking green.
Names?
He asked, though he didn't seem particularly interested in the answer.
Willow, I said. She's Natalie.
The other medic was already lowering Natalie to the stretcher, checking her pulse, pulling gloves tighter. She needs antibiotics, possibly stitches. He didn't ask how it happened. He didn't ask what we had seen. He didn't even look surprised. The moment Natalie was lowered into the back of the armored vehicle, I felt the adrenaline leave my body like a vacuum seal had broken inside me. She was pale, sweating, but cautious. One of the medics was already starting an IV. The other was muttering something into a shoulder radio. Short codes, clipped commands, nothing civilian. I stood outside the open doors, heart still hammering when I saw him. A man in a dark coat stepped out of the tree line, walking calmly towards us. No mask, no weapon. He didn't rush. He didn't need to. He moved like someone who owned the air around him. Late 40s, maybe early 50s, silver at the temples, clean-shaven, dressed in a long charcoal overcoat despite the dirt and blood still clinging to everything else. His eyes were unreadable,
gray like worn stone, but alert, calculating. "Who is that?" I asked the medic beside me. The man didn't answer. Carter stopped a few feet away from me and nodded once.
"Willow, Natalie?"
He knew our names. No introduction, no badge, just the gravel-smooth voice I remembered from the radio.
"You made the right decision calling for help."
"Help?" I snapped, my voice raw. "We almost died. My friend nearly bled out. What the hell was that thing? What is this?" Carter looked at me, not surprised, not concerned, just watching.
"An error," he said finally. "One that has now been corrected."
"That's not an answer," I said.
"No," he replied. "It isn't."
He reached into the inside of his coat and pulled out two black envelopes, matte finish, thick paper, no markings. He handed one to me, the other he placed gently beside Natalie's leg in the van. I didn't open it. Carter spoke again, still calm.
"There's a non-disclosure agreement inside. Sign it, keep the money, forget this happened."
"And if we don't?" He didn't blink.
"There are worse things than what you saw tonight."
Behind him, the creature stirred, just once. A faint ripple beneath the containment wires, like it heard him, like it knew the deal had been offered. I stared at the envelope. It was heavier than it should have been. "What was that thing?" I asked again, quieter this time. Carter didn't look at the monster. He looked at me.
"An abomination."
Then he turned and walked away. Not another word. He passed through the containment line and vanished behind one of the APCs, already giving new orders to the soldiers waiting in the fog. The doors of the medical vehicle hissed shut. We were driven out of the forest in silence, past places that weren't on any map, guarded by people who didn't exist. They left us at a roadside motel with our clothes cleaned, wounds bandaged, and our phones scrubbed. The envelopes were still with us. I opened mine. There was money inside. A lot of it. Fresh bills, no serial numbers. And the NDA. At the top, where it should have listed an organization, it just read, "Division Asset Engagement, Observation Report 17B Witness Category, Civilian Status, Resolved." We never signed it. But we never talked either. Not really. Natalie still has nightmares. I do too. Sometimes we call each other just to sit in silence. Sometimes we don't sleep at all. Last week, I found something in my mailbox. No return address, no stamp. Just a black envelope, identical to the one Carter gave me. Inside was a single sheet of paper. Typed, centered. It wasn't the only one. Then, in the same exact font as the NDA header, "We are watching."